There are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL draft this year. My name is Ben Solak, and I host the Ringer NFL Draft Show with Danny Kelly, Danny Heifetz, and Greg Horlbeck. We cover trades, free agency, and the draft, which is, obviously. We'll tell you about everything, which includes which quarterbacks are good, which quarterbacks are bad, and which quarterbacks are just Kirk Cousins. That is the Ringer NFL Draft Show. Search the Ringer NFL Draft Show on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner, to learn more. Baseball is something else.
It is Thursday, March 21st. When we talk about artificial intelligence and how it's impacting the entertainment industry, it's often in the abstract. We know it's coming, it's going to be hugely disruptive, and in some places it's already here. But we know less about how it's being used and the impact that those uses are already having on the day-to-day way that films, television is being made. I'm always shocked and how little people outside the visual effects arena know about the use of AI in Hollywood to improve the look and feel of the storytelling, how these tools are both bringing down the cost of content and opening up the creative opportunities for more and better stuff. That's not an ad for AI. I know the downsides as well and all the jobs that have been and are going to be lost to this technology. But that's happening, regardless of any efforts to stop it. So today we're going to talk about some of the recent innovations and the impact they're having on things like visual effects, dubbing, post-production and ADR, digital makeup, tweaks that are making stars look and sound so good in movies. Am I talking right now or am I AI? You wouldn't actually know. I think it's me, but you can't really be sure. Lots going on. So we've got Matt Panousis back on the show. Matt is the COO and co-founder of Mars, a next-generation visual effects studio that works a lot with AI. He was on the show last year to talk about de-aging actors, and today he's got thoughts about how AI is already impacting Hollywood, behind the scenes mostly, but not always. From The Ringer and Puck, I'm Matt Bellany, and this is The Town. Okay, we are here with Matt Panousis, who is co-founder and COO of Mars, which is a VFX and AI technology startup. Welcome, Matt.
Hi, thanks for having me again, Matt.
So yeah, what I want to do today is I want to sort of look at the practical things that are actually happening, because I feel like the AI discussion in Hollywood often goes off the rails, where people start talking about AI-generated video replacing Hollywood. We're guilty of that. We did a whole episode on that a couple weeks ago. And AI is going to write scripts and replace everyone. And a lot of that, the fears are founded. I get it. But that's not here yet. There are a lot of things AI is already doing in Hollywood that people don't quite know about. So that's what I want to get into today. And it's mostly in the visual and audio effects world, correct?
Yeah, and I'd say there's been a lot of development over the past year. I still think, given the state of a lot of these new technologies, there's a lot of, I think, unwarranted fear about how close some of this technology is to fully overtaking the visual special effects industry. But granted, there are very meaningful developments and like the limitations that exist today will lift over time.
So give us a little bit of a practical breakdown on how you guys and others are using AI in the visual effects world and what's new. Because we know that, you know, crowd scenes and you can replace someone's mouth in a scene, like that's been happening. What's new in this world?
Our new product is LipDub AI, which is basically a video localization tool that allows content creators to both dub and lip sync perfectly to any language. So basically a way to help creators take content global in a way that looks a lot better than, let's say, subtitling or bad dubs, as we call them, where you see all sorts of discrepancies between audio and visual. That's a super practical application that we've been working on now for 2 years.
So you're able to take a scene and change the audio to whatever language and also change the mouth movements to match that language.
Yeah, exactly. And what's been really interesting, though, over the past, honestly, since we've been building right alongside us, we've been focusing on lip sync, but right on the other side of the aisle has been AI audio, which has been getting faster, better, cheaper. And so it's been interesting because we did develop this product originally for Hollywood as a way to make their dubs look real wherever they distribute them in the world. But now what's happening is because you have AI dubbing becoming so accessible, we're now seeing like a whole swath of new industries that have never been able to afford dubbing start to dub content, which means start to lip sync content. So like as an example, a lot of our clients now are YouTube channels that are coming in, localizing their channels, advertisers, corporate content, digital marketing, you name it. It's just, I think people are kind of growing tired of subtitles as like the mechanism for localizing video. And this is kind of like now like the evolution of that. So I'd say like that's a pretty practical application that's going on right now.
Yeah, that would seem so. And you know, I've been watching Shogun on Hulu, and it's a great show, but it's mostly in Japanese. And it would be nice, not saying I would do this, but it would be nice to have an option to watch it in all English and that the mouths of the characters would not be off as they are when you watch a typical show that is dubbed.
Yeah, exactly. This text-to-video thing is really going to be super meaningful.
All right, so how is it being used now?
So it's just starting. I wouldn't say it's been used in Hollywood yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a broader theme. You look at most new AI, whether you're talking about text-to-image models, which were all the buzz a year ago, text-to-video, which is the buzz today. It always starts with, okay, the quality's not good enough. So the first game is always, how do we make the quality better?
Yeah, I've watched some of those videos. They're fine, but they have major flaws.
There's a lot of limitations. I mean, what Sora's done is, Sora is being OpenAI's competitor now in the race. I mean, the caliber of those videos are leaps and bounds above competition. They're actually, many videos are indistinguishable. You wouldn't be able to tell. But there's all sorts of limitations. As an example, if I want to create an environment that I want to use in multiple scenes, I can't. Because when I created in one scene and I created in the second scene, I can use the same text prompt and I won't get exactly the same thing. That's a big limitation, right?
If yeah.
I have a show that an environment.
Especially for a narrative where you're trying to create a living room that looks the same in every scene.
Right. But and the same thing goes for the characters that are created in these text-to-video platforms. I can't yet create a character in these text-to-video platforms that is consistent across 2,000 shots in a Hollywood movie. And sorry, going back for a second, I think one of the biggest limiters, which we've seen get lifted on the text to image side, is text was the starting prompt for text to image, right? People realize, though, that text is actually quite limiting. And so over the past 2 years, people have been coming up with all sorts of new inputs that you can use. So as an example, I want to sketch a duck and I want to use that as my framework for what gets generated. As an example, text is just one of many inputs. The more inputs that you add to these models, the more controllability you get. And so it seems like one of the limiters right now for these text-to-video models is you don't get great control, you don't get perfect temporal consistency, you can't generate things consistently across scenes. But what I will say coming from VFX is the work that is getting generated, I mean, these are shots, Matt, that would cost millions of dollars and would take VFX teams months and months to complete. And so I always think about what Hollywood's going through in terms of like the downward pressure on costs and how do we continue to create spectacle in a way that's actually profitable. And I do believe there's going to be adoption of this technology.
Oh, clearly. I mean, this is a business show, not a tech show. So we are concerned with the business aspects here. And there is already an impact on this stuff. There are already jobs and functions that have been subsumed by a lot of these models. And I think this is only the beginning. I'm not sure if I agree with Jeffrey Katzenberg's line about, what is it, 80 or 90% of animation jobs will be gone. But certainly there's going to be an impact. Like jobs like storyboard artists, where the job is to take the script and create storyboards that visualize what the director might want to have the scenes look like. Well, that's what Sora does. You can put the script in and visualize certain aspects and tweak it and make things different.
There's companies now, by the way, that are taking the approach of you text, you create a storyboard, you can then tweak that storyboard still in image form. And then once you're happy with the images in the storyboard, click turn to video and you'll create videos of each of those scenes. So
it's, I mean, that's amazing.
But I always think about the struggle in Hollywood of like, everybody really does seem to be quite half glass empty when it comes to this stuff. But I truly believe, and especially when you look at the day to day of a typical VFX artist, it's a hard day. These guys work 14-hour days, especially when there's client timelines. I do truly believe that, as opposed to job loss being the biggest implication of what we're seeing with AI, I think there's a very realistic world where what ends up happening is Hollywood just ends up creating that much more content because they're now able to create content faster and more efficiently. And that requires the same amount of artists, but those artists are now all supercharged with these tools that allow them to do things faster. And so I think that's like the half glass full way to look at all of this, which not as many people talk about.
Yeah, if there's a market for more content, I mean, what if there's not? We talked about peak TV and too much to watch on streaming, that's all being pulled back now for various financial concerns, but also because there was a sense that the audience wasn't there. The subscriber numbers didn't go up when the volume was at the level that it was and the level that would support that kind of investment. So even if the tools are available to make more content, at least the professionally produced stuff, maybe it doesn't go up and we're left with a business that just costs less and employs fewer people and serves the audience that way.
You could absolutely be right. And I think we all felt it in 2022 that as good as it was to be in the industry, like this isn't sustainable and we don't need this much content. So you could totally be right there.
Well, one aspect of this that does make business sense is, you know, you hear people at the animation companies in particular, Disney, DreamWorks, that complain that it costs $200 million to make an original animated film at the level that the audience demands from a company like Disney or DreamWorks Animation. And with a lot of these tools, it's pretty clear that the cost of those kinds of films is going to come down, or should come down significantly. And if that's the case, maybe it does make sense for Disney to continue to invest in original animation and put those movies in theaters. Whereas at $200 million, you got to make $400 or $500 million for that to make sense. And it will lead to greater creativity, more chances, and a ultimately better product and newer franchises because of the flexibility you get with produced costs.
Yeah, I think that's so on point. And I saw a Matt Damon interview recently where he spoke about, you know, Good Will Hunting, my favorite movie, how it would never get made today because the math wouldn't work. We don't have DVD sales anymore. But I think the point he was making was like the kind of content that gets greenlit many times is inherently tied to how much did the content cost to make? And based on how much the content cost to make, do we think it can return X on top? And so I think as you change a key variable in that equation of, okay, like the content costs less, do they make different kinds of content as a result? Maybe better content? You know, maybe there's a world where the reason people weren't watching all this new content was because much of it wasn't very good. Yeah, I'm not suggesting that, but I'm just saying it's plausible.
Or there wasn't a real demand for the kind of stuff that's being made, but I get it.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
People don't realize that most movies now have significant visual effects in them, even movies that are not considered VFX heavy or spectacle type movies. There was an interesting piece in the New York Times last week about this fact, and you're at the front lines here, and some of it you're not allowed to talk about where you are de-aging actors, but we've known for a long time that actors now have this in their contract, that they get de-aged or they get slimmed or they get perfected in some way. I feel like AI is going to lead to the rise of the genetically perfect actor in every movie.
Yeah.
But there's a cost associated with that. And if you are Tom Cruise doing a Mission Impossible movie, yes, you work that into the contract where the wrinkles on your face are erased in the entire movie, and they can do that for a price. But if this is available to everybody for a low price, why wouldn't you do it in all movies?
Yeah, it could become, as the price of technology comes down, and i.e. accessibility to that technology goes up, then things tend to become less so outliers and more so standard. So if today in the manual VFX world, only the biggest cast gets beautified, in the future, it may be that everyone that shows up on screen gets beautified because it's so damn cheap and fast to do so, which will further unrealistic beauty standards and all that bad stuff. But yeah, right. I think you're totally right that a lot of this stuff is going to, again, just allow for more VFX to get infused into projects.
You could add and take away weight too. Like Christian Bale shouldn't have to starve himself to play a role anymore. Like, you guys can do that, right? I mean, it doesn't always look 100% real, but at some point it will. There's a quote in this article that was hilarious about how most directors now, they have options when a character is delivering a monologue. If the eyes are blinking or if there is an imperfection on their face, they can just superimpose eyes that aren't closed into a monologue so that the person doesn't blink. And like, that's a great tool for directors.
Oh, it's fantastic. Like a lot of this stuff, because, you know, there's always been a saying in the industry, in the VFX industry, of, you know, fix it in post. But fix it in post has always come with a price tag. I think, you're just going to see more and more stuff get fixed in post.
I mean, I joke about the weight thing, but is that possible to just take 40 pounds off Christian Bale?
Yes and no. We don't have the technology today, but like a version of text to video is the ability to leverage existing video. So just like the analogy of what I was saying before in text to image, how it started with text and then people started to realize, well, what if I want to start with a pre-existing picture? The same trajectory is now happening in text to video, where we're still at the infancy, where people, the quality's not even there yet and all you can do is text. But we're already seeing trend lines towards, what if I want to start with a pre-existing video, i.e. of Christian Bale? And my, so that becomes a control. That's a constraint now. That's exactly what we do with LipDub, by the way. When we're doing LipDub, it is generative AI, but I have this really big control, which is I have a pre-existing video. I'm not starting from scratch. So in the future, yes, I do believe you'll be able to upload pre-existing video, identify what you want to change in that video, and then generate just that new thing from scratch, whether that be Christian Bale, the same motion, doing the same things, but 50 pounds lighter. Yeah, I think it's all trending there. There's projections right now that we're about, for text to video, 2 to 5 years away from that level of control that would allow this to be a major tool in Hollywood.
Well, that's great news for Christian Bale's general health. And also, you know, RIP the fat suit. Like, what's Brendan Fraser going to do when you can AI make him 400 pounds? You have to give some Oscars back. So a couple other practical applications. One that came up in this whole fight over the Roadhouse movie that is just coming out was this question of using AI for the ADR process. That's the process where the voiceover or the actors' voices are put into the movie after they shoot. You have to do ADR to like make the audio match the video, and sometimes they add dialogue off camera and things like that. Typically right now, AI is used in the temp ADR. So when the director's putting together a cut, you can use, let's say, Ryan Gosling's voice and create an AI version of Ryan Gosling's voice to fill in holes or to make scenes better. And then they re-record that with Ryan Gosling's actual performance and voice. And that is per a guild requirement. Am I right?
Yeah. Yes, you are.
So that's protected. That is not going to be ultimately subsumed by AI, or is it only a matter of time?
AI audio is very good. So AI audio is pretty much the combination of two things. It's voice cloning, where you need a very small sample size of someone's voice at this point to create a very realistic replica. Like with 2 minutes of your voice, Matt, I could have you say anything pretty much through one of these models. It would sound just like you.
Well, unfortunately, there's hours and hours and hours of my voice that are out there now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you have more than enough training for any
I'm
model.
Sure we I've could... endorsed some burger chain in Brazil or something on the internet.
It's. I know you're joking, but you never know. I mean, I think a lot of the stuff with the guilds is more about protectionist measures. But like in terms of like, can you replace a line convincingly that Ryan Gosling didn't say without getting him back in the booth? The answer is yes today. You can do it. The limitations when it comes to a lot of these models and why they're being adopted more in YouTube and advertising is what's really hard with these AI audio models is getting perfect performance. Because, you know, in Hollywood, they care so deeply about exactly how lines are delivered. Yeah. To the extent you have a little bit more flexibility, I mean, these things are great and used today. Like all the work that we do in YouTube is an example. I mean, no one has the budgets to pay dubbing studios. It's all happening through AI audio tools. And it sounds great.
Is that what Netflix is doing? I mean, Netflix has touted its, you know, huge investment in dubbing so that all of its shows play all over the world. Are they currently using AI for that?
Not for the audio, again, because I think there's elements of not being able to control performance that are really hard for directors to wrap their heads around. But your example was ADR, where the lines are short anyways. So like, does it really matter? I would say not really. Ironically, even for us, we built LipDub AI for the purpose of localization, but we've actually been used for multiple ADR shows in Hollywood. So you can actually see our stuff. You wouldn't know, but what happens with us now is people will come to us, they want to replace 10 seconds of dialogue. They'll actually have the actor record new dialogue, and then we'll just come in and sync the lips perfectly and make it look great. So that's like a secondary use case, but it has been used in Hollywood already multiple times now.
And the guilds are okay with that?
So we kind of live in a somewhat kosher space. We're not replacing any jobs per se. We're just making dubs look real for the first time. We're not an AI audio company that's generating AI audio from scratch. There are tools that do that. That's not what we do. What we do is we sync new audio to existing video. So we're in somewhat of a safe spot. But yeah, like with regards to AI audio, there's huge concerns right now around what's going to happen to voice actors in the future. Many of those voice actors are now licensing their voices on marketplaces because they're seeing the industry trend that way. And they're saying, well, I may as well license my voice if it's going to be used anyways.
So if like the voice of Bart Simpson dies, Nancy Cartwright, I mean, I know she's a Scientologist, so they supposedly will never die. But if Nancy Cartwright dies, she could license her voice over to Fox to keep the Simpsons running forever.
Yeah, that's, I think, cool, but, you know, scary at the same time. So I think it does cut both ways.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, the guilds can fight this and they'll win on certain fronts, but this is going to become the norm. And even in this latest negotiation, SAG was pretty clear. We're not trying to kill AI. We're trying to manage and profit from it.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you are not stopping this technology. And I think to the extent you actually try and curb it, what you're going to see, and I remember we spoke about this on the side, Matt, was, you know who's not curbing it? Our amateur creators. Who are going to be using these tools, and they use these tools. That's what's so interesting about AI in this visual world that we live in is, you know, the early adopters are actually always the amateurs.
Yeah. No, I just saw a video. I saw this animated video on LinkedIn, you know, where all the best content is. There was a video on LinkedIn that was an animated short that was all AI, and it was just some dude that did it.
Right. And so you could, even theoretically, it's like Hollywood, even if you could fully curb it, which you can't, because like name me one technology that's ever been curbed by like a new exponential technology that's curbed by a union. It's never happened in the history of time. But even if you could, all that's going to happen is these amateur creators who are super talented are going to start using these tools. And there's already, as I see it, like this battle taking place between eyeballs. And are they going to social? Or are they going to spend time on Netflix and Hulu and what have you? And I think to the extent Hollywood wants to like really remain competitive in this race for eyeballs, it's like, you've got to adopt, because the other side's adopting it quickly and they're going to start coming out with really cool stuff. I mean, a lot of stuff that these influencers do and these social channels, a lot of the really popular stuff is comedy, because comedy doesn't really rely on any visual tools. But like, what's going to happen when these super talented kids get access to VFX out of a box? Maybe it's not as good as Hollywood, but it's out of the box. It's rapid. I mean, what kind of stuff are they going to be making and posting on YouTube? And, you know, is that going to pose a threat to Hollywood if they don't, you know, jump on the ship? So,
well, I'm looking forward to all the perverse and offensive ways that my voice is going to be used in the future. So thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Matt.
We are back with the call sheet. Craig, Ghostbusters back in theaters this weekend. Excited?
I was really surprised to learn that there have been three Ghostbusters now in the new remake series. I had no idea.
No. This is Ghostbusters 5. So there's the first two that came out in the 80s.
Yeah, I'm saying the ones that have come out in the last 10 years, I did not know that there were three of those already. I kind of thought there was one. They tried the female one, and then this was the sequel to the male one.
Yeah, that's all that exists.
This is the third one now.
No, it's not.
Yes. This is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Then there was Ghostbusters Afterlife in 2021.
Yes.
And then there was one before that.
Yes, that was the all-female one.
Are you sure?
I am sure. Ghostbusters Afterlife was the attempt to do a sequel to Ghostbusters 2 from 1989 or 90. And they are pretending that the all-female Ghostbusters didn't happen, doesn't exist. So,
okay.
Yeah.
AKA, it's just Bridesmaids, the movie, fighting ghosts.
Well, and people on the internet didn't like it. So they are pretending that didn't exist. Then they did Ghostbusters Afterlife, which was a reboot slash sequel of the original Ghostbusters 2. And now there is a direct sequel called Ghostbusters Frozen Empire that is coming out this weekend with Paul Rudd and the kid from Stranger Things.
Finn Wolfhard.
Yes. And the original Ghostbusters, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, and I believe Annie Potts is in it. And I believe also the villain from the first movie, William Atherton, is back, which is amazing. So yeah, this is the definition of franchise extension by fiscal responsibility. Sony had this property. They had to do something with it. The last one didn't do that great. Actually, it did 200. Typically, you need to get to like 300-400 for there to be a sequel. But the budget wasn't that high, and it came out in 2021 where they felt that, like, you know, people liked it enough and the pandemic kept people away from theaters. It did fine on home video. So they're like, fuck it, we're doing another one.
Let me ask you a question. When the first Ghostbusters came out, was it late 80s, 89?
84.
Was it considered a kid's movie, or was it primarily
for adults? No. I mean, I was a kid when it came out, so it was like the biggest thing in my world, but it was the first like real sci-fi blockbuster comedy. And it starred all of these like huge comedy stars. I mean, Bill Murray was a big star. This was post Caddyshack. This was like in the Bill Murray wheelhouse. And it was huge. It was the biggest movie of that year.
It's just interesting that now it has transitioned to basically just more of a kid's movie. We were talking off mic about how your son is really excited for this movie. There's no like 18-year-old that is going to go see this movie enthusiastically, or anyone in their 20s. Like, this is a dad and their son kind of movie now.
Of course. That's what they did to it. And it's probably the smart way to do it, because at the end of the day, the appeal for kids is the ghosts. It's, you know, silly ghost movie. And they knew that they could take the IP, bring it to a new generation. It's not going to be edgy at all. They're going right down the middle. And, you know, the first one was edgy. The first one felt like something new and cool and different. Now it's just like a kids movie that adults will take their kids to because they like Bill Murray, and the kids will go because it's Ghosts. My kid's into it. My kid liked the last one. We watched it at home. He actually liked the all-female one too.
So did you say, are you taking the over or the under?
I'm taking the under, to be honest. The tracking's at 46, about 46, 47. And I'm going to take the under. As much as I think that this is going to be a success for Sony and getting this movie to gross more than the last one, I just don't see it getting that high. I think Kung Fu Panda is doing surprisingly well in theaters. So that's going to take a little of the family audience. I think Roadhouse is on Prime this weekend. So that's going to take some of the adult male audience.
There's a lot of alternate programming for dads this weekend. You have the Roadhouse remake, and then you have March Madness.
Not to mention the Sydney Sweeney movie. Don't forget that. She's in Immaculate, which is not expected to do very well, like, you know, low single digits. But it is an option for pervy dads that want to see Sydney Sweeney as a nun.
Will you be there?
I will not. I'm not interested in the Sydney Sweeney movie, but I will be at Ghostbusters. My kid makes a lot of the programming decisions on what we do in theaters. So yeah, we'll be there. But I don't think it's going to get to 46. That's pretty high. All right, that's the show for today. I want to thank my guest, Matt Panousis. I want to thank producer Craig Horlbeck. I want to thank our editor, Jesse Lopez. And I want to thank you. We will see you next week.